Small business owners are always passionate about their work, and they have a lot on the line. Let Verizon help champion your small business dream. Whether you own a small business or scaling one or starting one from scratch, you need Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon Business Experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon Business Expert. Plus, Verizon Business Experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon has your back. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/smallbusiness.
Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones, from powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY, a big idea that inspired the world to invest differently, and still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
My mission is simple, to make you money. I'm here to level the playing field for all investors. There's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to help you find it. Mad Money starts now.
Hey, I'm Cramer. Welcome to Mad Money. Welcome to Cramer. I'll be able to make friends. I'm just trying to make you a little money. My job is not just to entertain, but to educate and teach you. So call me at 1-800-743-CNBC or tweet me Jim Cramer. Say goodbye to the best first quarter since 2019, a quarter we had a broad-based rally that was supposed to be impossible thanks to the Fed's refusal to cut interest rates. And while the quarter didn't exactly go out with a bang, the Dow advancing 47 points, the S&P gaining 0.11%, and NASDAQ dipping 0.12%, we'll look back on this period as still one more breathtakingly bullish interval. The difference, though, this time it wasn't just the Magnificent Seven leading the way. It was a broad range of companies across a host of different industries, which is exactly what you want from a bull market. Why were stocks so strong this quarter? Simple. We had great earnings. The numbers were splendid. The forecast even better. And the reaction's the best in a long time. The lesson, if you stayed away from the market because you heard that only a handful of big-name stocks are leading us higher, you missed some incredible moves. If you sat on your hands because the Fed hasn't given us the all-clear signal, you lost out. If you focused on the earnings, though, you prospered.
House of pleasure.
And going forward, I expect more of the same. Last night, Fed Governor Chris Waller said that the Fed's in no hurry to cut rates. That became the new benchmark of central bank intransigence. I think his warning kept the lid on the average today, but, you know, I think he's right. All in all, still, it's just a waste at this point to be fixated on the Fed right now. Last night, we got great numbers, for instance, say, and a 17% gain from RH, Steel Restoration Hardware, and a good report from Jefferies, the brokerage firm, which had a 52-week high before reversing mid-morning. On top of that, Home Depot made this incredible $18 billion bet on housing with an acquisition of SRS Distribution. That's a professional building supply outfit. All in all, good news for the market, although the week ended up surprisingly overbought. That's what I'm most worried about in ages. We know Wall Street is basically a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately business, isn't it? So let's talk about our game plan. Next week brings about a handful of earnings reports. They're eclectic, but they could be very meaningful. PVH kicks things off on Monday afternoon. Now, this is the maker of Tommy Hilfiger and Calvin Klein. It hit a 52-week high today. Stocks doubled from where it was trading before long-term interest rates peaked last October. So many stocks were obliterated by skyrocketing interest rates. So when long rates started coming down and the Fed admitted they were done tightening, stocks like PVH could come roaring back. PVH will be an amazing test case of the new quarter because its stock has run so much. Can it keep going higher on better than adequate numbers, which is what I'm expecting? Honestly, you know what? I'm a little stumped here because unlike RH, which soared on its better than expected quarter after spending a long time in the wilderness, PVH is coming red hot. Let's take the new temperature after the quarter. Paychex reports on Tuesday morning. This is a peculiar stock. Tends to run up into the quarter and then sells off after the results. But the analysts tend not to like it, which is crazy, even when the numbers are good. I figured the pattern plays out again. You get a chance to buy this payroll processor after the pullback. More important, though, Paychex will tell us a great deal about the state of small and medium-sized businesses because those are its main clients. Given that we just got a glowing report from Cintas, the uniform rental service that counts more than 1 million small, medium-sized business customers? Well, I got to tell you, I think it could be stellar. The small business segment has been the workhorse of this economy, and I think Paychex will verify that when it reports. Now, best performing stock in the Dow for the first quarter, believe it or not, was the Walt Disney Company with a 35% gain. And I believe that's because of what happens on Wednesday, which is the conclusion of the proxy fight between Disney itself and Nelson Peltz, who's seeking two board seats. The company's fighting him with everything he can throw at the guy except Mickey and Goofy, the latter of which pretty much define the board strategy in this context. When the book is written on this, I think it may turn out to be among the most expensive proxy fights in history. Disney spent so much energy and shareholder money trying to stop this guy Peltz. It's a wonder why they didn't just say, come on in. Then again, the activist involvement has clearly given the board a real incentive to actually get their act together, which is how you end up with Disney's much higher than expected cost cuts to move the stock higher. And that's why the stock's been able to roar. The whole thing's been great for shareholders, including my charitable trust. Right, by the way, most entertaining proxy fights since season 3 of Succession. Of course, if I were running Disney, I'd probably just say the business has finally turned around and Peltz has nothing to do with it. That's not the whole story. It may be kind of more of an alternative narrative, but I can't argue with anything that got this stock going like this. Next, we have another hot apparel play. Reporting Wednesday, that's Levi Strauss & Company, where the stock has gone from $12 and change in the dark days in October to almost 20 bucks now. Last time we had them on the show was when former CEO Chip Berg handed the reins to Michelle Goss, late of Kohl's. Since then, everything's going smoothly. Like with PVH, I expect a good quarter, but the stock's coming in so hot, I have no idea how the market will react. I keep telling you this rally's broad-based and deep, including areas that haven't led the way in ages, like the Master Limited Partnerships. These are high-yielding, tax-advantaged oil and gas companies that used to be among the most popular securities for those who wanted a solid source of fixed income, and they're coming back in vogue. One of the best is Enterprise Products Partners, which is a terrific processor and transporter of petrochemicals. Stocks now had an amazing run from 26 to 29 in 2 months. Okay, I know it doesn't sound all that amazing, but don't forget, you also get a 7% yield. On Wednesday, Enterprise Products will hold an analyst meeting. I think they're going to tell a fantastic story. For those of you who want income, this EPT is as good as it gets. Food stocks have participated in the rally, too. Really, they've been amazing. McCormick, the spice company, this week putting up some very good numbers, just like General Mills and Hormel before it. I think that inflation inputs have stopped going higher, but the price increases that these companies put through at the supermarket haven't been rolled back, which means that we might get a fourth food surprise, this time from Conagra. The maker of Slim Jims, Orville Redenbacher's Popcorn, Chef Boyardee, Healthy Choice, among others, reports before opening bell on Thursday. The company has struggled of late with sales, but I think it can produce good earnings this time when the revenues aren't even that impressive. Frankly, with a 4.7% yield, you can do a lot worse. Finally, on Friday, we get the Labor Department's non-farm payroll report, and I think we're going to see a very strong set of figures. The economy still has a healthy head of steam. We just haven't seen the kind of mass layoffs that so many expected, and the hard landing camp has been left wanting. In my view, the market's now well prepared for a hot employment number, so if the labor report is more lukewarm, we'll go into earnings season with a pleasant backdrop. Bottom line, keep an eye on the unemployment report, because everything else that's coming next week pales in comparison, even the no-holds-barred Disney proxy fight. Let's go to Isaiah in New Jersey. Isaiah!
Hey, Jim. How are you? Big fan.
I'm doing well. How about you?
Great. Just had a question about RTX. What's your overall sentiment about that company, and how
all
do you
right,
feel about
it? Jeff Marks and I were marveling. This has been an incredible comeback story, believe it or not. I mean, look, it had a problem with engines and a problem with cyclical, but this stock is all the way back to 97, yet it still only sells at 18 times earnings. I remain bullish on RTX as a way to play the aerospace cycle, given the fact that Boeing is so bad. How about we go to my home state of New Jersey, Kyle in New Jersey. Kyle!
Hey, my best friend Jim Cramer. How you doing, man?
All right, sunshine. How about you?
Listen, next time you're at the Jersey Shore, if you're down here this summer, South Jersey Shore, I want to take you to dinner, you and your wife.
I look forward to that. I'd like to join you for dinner. Maybe we go a little Italian.
Okay. My parents have an Italian restaurant in Ocean City, so let's go.
Yes! Yes! I want to go there. What's the name of it? We got other people telling. What's the name of it?
It's Luigi's on 9th Street in Ocean City.
Luigi's. Write that down. Luigi's. Okay, how can I help you?
All right, Jim, I swore on myself after the SPAC craze I would not get involved with another SPAC, but I thought this one was different. I've talked to you about it a couple times. I feel like maybe the only person that got rich on this one was Chamath. And after listening to your interview with Noto last week, I figured, you know, maybe he's, telling the truth. Are you still buying SoFi, or should I?
Kyle, I believe in SoFi. I believe in Noto. I know it's been a But I got to tell you, I think it can come back. I really do. Remember, before they just exercised, before they issued the stock for the convert, it was flying. And they actually did shore up their balance sheet. I say you got to stay with SoFi. All right, look, we got to keep an eye on next week's jobs report because everything else pales by comparison, even the Disney proxy fight. Oh, man, money tonight. I'm sitting down with the CEO of Walgreens after earnings to find out what's next for that company. Then, ahead of next week's spinoffs of 3M and GE, I'm taking a look at some previously successful splits that could be worth a second look. And miss the Investing Club's monthly meeting yesterday? I'm going to give you a sneak peek into what it's all about. So stay with Cramer.
Don't miss a second of Mad Money. Follow at Jim Cramer on X. Have a question? Tweet Cramer. Hashtag Mad Mentions. Send Jim an email to madmoney@cnbc.com or give us a call at 1-800-743-CNBC. Miss something? Head to madmoney.cnbc.com.
Fact. Running a business is not getting easier on your wallet. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. Also a fact, smart businesses are reducing costs and headaches by graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You can cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See how you'll profit with NetSuite, and then you can think of all the ways you could be spending the money you save. Company retreat in Malibu, anyone? By popular demand, NetSuite is offering a one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to NetSuite.com to start saving.
When you're hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging to connect with candidates faster. Plus, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Mad Money. Just go to Indeed.com/Mad Money right now and support this show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Mad Money. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What are we making these results from Walgreens Boots Alliance? The drugstore chain reported this morning posting a clean top and bottom line beat, but management also lowered the high end of their full-year earnings forecast, and they said they're taking an impairment charge on their VillageMD business. More important, on the conference call, new CEO Tim Wentworth laid out his turnaround plans, which is what allowed the stock to rally more than 3% today. This potential comeback story is all about new leadership, so we are lucky that we get a chance to speak with the architect of the turn, Tim Wentworth, the CEO of Walgreens Boots Alliance. Take a look. Tim, I want to thank you, first of all, for coming on and what feels like kind of day one of the new Walgreens, where you're trying to simplify and strengthen. And I want to know what simplify and strengthen you think will look like over the next year.
Well, Jim, thanks for noticing, because that's exactly what we're doing. Over the next year, you will see us continue what we started today, which is, you know, today you saw us stop doing, for all practical purposes, sale leasebacks. You saw us basically say our Cencora shares, we're going to sell those into the market as we move out of that position, rather than doing complex variable prepaid forward sorts of things. So some of it's on the accounting side, but more importantly, it's really getting focused operationally on the underlying parts of the business that are going to drive our future. And so, as I was able to announce today, we're knee deep, frankly, if not neck deep, in an analysis of our entire book of business and the different pieces to look at what is going to drive our future growth, what gives us synergy, what is in a marketplace that we can win in, And if you can't answer those questions positively, what's the way to then exit our strategies in a way that's most effective for our shareholders? So a year from now, I think you're going to see a company that's even more focused, probably has a few less of the things that we have now, but also has doubled down on some things where we see a real bright future, including, and I think importantly, Jim, the retail store, the back of the store and the pharmacy, which today you heard is continuing to do well, and the front of the store as we continue to evolve sort of what that model has got to look like in order for us to win overall.
Okay, well, let me give you a sense of what I get after I read the conference call. Obviously, it's a tough conference call to read. I'm trying so hard. I see a Chick-fil-A model of incredible service in the back where pharmacy's where I want to go, and up front is your incredible private brands that you make a lot of money. I don't see a lot of Cheez-Its there. I don't see a lot of bad stuff for you, and I think that you are going to be the ultimate in terms of figuring out how the customer is going to get the best price for GLP-1 and everything else. How's that for a version?
I think, if I were hiring a head of strategy, Jim, I'd bring you on board because, in fact, you know, what you just talked about is very much how we think about the business, which is, A, the back of the store. And listen, my family loves Chick-fil-A. I've used them as an example of great service. We believe that that's something we're delivering today, which is why we are so successful, both as a partner for pharma and as someone that people trust to actually give them the vaccines and the other things that we do at the back of the store. But if you come to the front of the store, it's a process that we're in the middle of in terms of really relooking at the role of private labels. We launched almost 40 new private label products this quarter, for example. And as well, Jim, the service and the, I hate buzzwords, but the omni-channel experience for our users. And something that we didn't talk about before, but I love to talk about, is that over 80% of our online orders, where you're home, you go to our app, you want some things from your Walgreens, are delivered over 80% within 1 hour. And so we've got a customer experience, whether you come into our store or whether you need something delivered to your home, that's going to be unmatched.
Well, my next question was going to be, how are you going to beat Amazon? I don't have to worry about that because Amazon can't touch that. They can't. They can't go that fast. Congratulations.
You know, Jim, let me tell you what. I love Amazon. They set the bar and they have driven lots of innovation in lots of industry. They have forced us. You know, would we be doing 1 hour delivery, but not for Amazon and Instacart and other things? I don't know. But what I can tell you is our consumers have been trained to expect better. We're giving it to them. And the difference, though, is because I don't think we'll beat Amazon because we're 1 hour and they're two or they're 10. We will beat Amazon because of the human interface that we offer in communities and neighborhoods, 8,600 locations today, where you can come in if you actually are getting a drug that you want to talk about, if you have a health concern, if you want to get an over-the-counter product to go along with your drug. Those are the things that I think are going to differentiate us, not just the fact we can do it in an hour.
Okay, well, that means to me, Tim, that right now when I go to a rival of yours, a pharmacy, sometimes they're closed, which I regard as odd because I need my medicine. Are we going to be able to see enough pharmacists at Walgreens that I know if I go there, I'm going to be treated actually by a pharmacist?
Yes. And let me tell you why. First of all, we are actually working with a group of deans of college pharmacy from around the country, 17 of them, to actually remap the workplace of the future in community pharmacy and then re-engineer curricula to actually deliver candidates to that model. And we are going to be the preferred place for a pharmacist to come work. But secondly, we are removing massive amounts of work from the pharmacists that are low-value work, whether that's counting pills using our micro-fulfillment centers, or we have other experiments going on where, in fact, you can actually see or talk to a pharmacist that's not in the store, even as you're in the store, in certain states where the law allows us to have centralized pharmacy like that, where we can take one person and make them very efficient, touching many stores and the patients in those stores where they need counseling. So we think designing the workplace differently. We think designing work differently. We think engaging with the community that's creating tomorrow's pharmacists in a way that's constructive and as a leader are all going to position us to be able to have the workforce that we need to deliver what you would need when you come into the store.
That's certainly not the way it is now. That would be terrific. Now, let's talk about VillageMD. Let's talk about the so-called doc in the box, if we want to denigrate it, or convenient doctors want to be right. You're going to go, what, individual by individual outfit to see which ones are profitable, or is everything on the table? Because I know there's some big charges.
Sure. So you saw we took the charge this quarter, which, again, I would differentiate VillageMD from an investment that we've made And that is worth less today than it was yesterday in terms of our balance sheet, because we have written that down. But then there's the actual providing of the service, where, as I announced, they've actually had a good quarter, grew by almost 19%. They continue to deliver on their model. And so we like very much working with them, alongside them, to capture the scripts, keep those patients' adherence that they're taking risk on, and so forth. And so from our perspective, while I've been very clear, we view it as an investment, we are not going to add to that investment in terms of where we deploy capital. But by the same token, we view them as a terrific sandbox to create additional services that are going to benefit other provider groups as we move forward.
In the meantime, what a gem this Boots is. Now, you've got the front of the store doing incredibly well. I know, I think there were people who wanted you to give away Boots. Maybe Boots, 2,000 stores, maybe this thing is a store of the future.
You know, Boots has responded to its unique marketplace terrifically. And, you know, you only have to, one of the reasons I'm super confident about our front of the store kind of revival, I'll call it, is because once you focus on something and put really good people on it, you're going to get results if you've got the right strategy. Boots 5 years ago was not doing particularly well. And today, as you say, they are setting the benchmark in the UK and in parts of Europe as it relates to what a retail pharmacy that's very front-end sort of centric can deliver. They've had phenomenal results. Their leadership is terrific. And we saw them again this quarter, grew again. So, yes, they are a model. Also, the back of their store doing now treating patients for 7 different conditions, treating them, not just dispensing, but able to interface with the patient as a pharmacist, diagnose, write the prescription, and take the load off the primary care physicians in the UK. This will take off, I forget the number, it's more than 10 million visits that will now go away. And frankly, it's better for the patient, it's convenient, it doesn't threaten physicians. We see what's going on there as a really interesting dynamic that we could potentially replicate here as we push to have pharmacists viewed as true providers and reimbursed as true providers.
Again, that would be amazing. Now, I didn't even talk about the thing that is your strength, the Express Scripts, the way you're going to handle reimbursement. Mary Langowski, a huge coup. You are basically going to reinvent, I believe, how much we're going to have to pay as customers. Is that possible?
I think so. And the good news is I think we will have willing partners in some of the PBMs and the payers to do it, Jim, because I think the noise from the market, the clear message from the market, set aside the regulatory stuff in Washington, just the consumers and the people who pay for healthcare, they want it to work differently. And the good news is that will benefit us and it will benefit the payers when a patient actually goes into a drugstore and comes into our store, gets what they expect at a price that they understand and that's transparent and that's close to what their plan is paying and is rational. Those are things that I think the pull from the marketplace will actually exceed the push that we could ever do, and it's going to create a much better aligned system.
All right, last question. You addressed shrink. You didn't give us a number, but can you make shrink to be something that you and I will not be talking about a year from now?
We are working really, really hard to do that. And again, there are a number of pieces to that. The one I would just double click on, Jim, is, you know, we talked about delivery to home in an hour just a moment ago. When we look at the stores that are really struggling, and again, you got to break shrink into pieces. You've got this true organized crime element, and then you've just got pilfering, right? Mm-hmm. And the opportunity is, you know, shrink is not equal across all 8,700 of our stores, right? There are a subset of stores where we see it as an issue. And what we are able to do using home delivery, using potentially a different model inside the store, it may not be as good a shopping experience as if you just come into the open store that we may have in a suburban corner. But by the same token, we'll be able to serve a community where it's a bit more challenging to do that in a way that's safe for the community, safe for our employees, and would reduce shrink meaningfully by basically, I don't want to say locking the door of the store, but meaningfully managing the store experience more closely.
And may I just say that I saw you in January at the J.P. Morgan conference where you had just come in. And your knowledge of this organization and what has to be done is just, I don't know how I can say anything other than this is just excellent what you brought to us. Excellent.
Thanks, Jim.
And I thank you so much. That's Tim Wentworth. He's the CEO of Walgreens Boots Alliance. I knew this man would come up with a solution. It's still a work in progress, but it's unbelievable. Thank you so much, Tim. We'll be back in a moment.
After the break, fortune favors the sold. This corporate breakup spun gold for investors, but not in the way you might think. Cramer Explains, next.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Let's talk about spinoffs. Earlier this week, we spoke to Dave Banyard. He's the CEO of MasterBrand, which the cabinet business was spun off by the old Fortune Brands Home and Security at the end of 2022. At the time, most investors figured it was a brilliant move simply because it allowed Fortune Brands to spread its wings and become more of a growth company rather than being held back by the more staid cabinets business. Yet since the breakup on December 15th, MasterBrand has rallied an astounding 143%, trouncing Fortune Brands, which is up 47% over the same period. It was that unloved spinoff that gave you the biggest gains. The business that Fortune Brands wanted to move on from. Of course, it has actually worked out for everyone, considering the incredibly vicious Fed tightening cycle. And you know what? This kind of thing happens a lot, in large part because breakups tend to benefit everybody involved, as Wall Street prefers smaller, more bite-sized companies that are easy to get their arms and heads around. Let me give you some examples of some unloved spinoffs that ended up trouncing their former parent companies. Pretty interesting. For years, I've marveled the disparity in performance between Lamb Weston, that's the king of frozen potato products like French fries, and the company that spun it off, Conagra Brands. Lamb Weston's more food service oriented, while Conagra's a typical packaged food play that's now mostly focused on snacks in the frozen food aisle. When that spinoff was completed, and that was way back in November of 2016, Conagra CEO said, quote, "This marks an exciting new chapter for Conagra. We are now a pure play company with a renewed focus on capturing growth and driving shareholder value," end quote. Just like we saw with MasterBrand, Conagra couldn't wait to get rid of Lamb Weston's slow growth frozen potato business. But you know what? Since November 10th, 2016, when Lamb Weston's shares began regular weight trading, the stock is up a cool 251%.
House of pleasure.
While Conagra actually is going down in price.
The house of pleasure.
Although you'd still have a modest gain when you include the all-important dividends. Still, nearly 8 years of nothing is a suboptimal performance. Meanwhile, Lamb Weston's been a juggernaut. Even though we went through a global pandemic that really hurt the food service industry in the interim, in the end, people love French fries. Again, Conagra is right to spin off Lamb Weston, but only because Lamb Weston was severely undervalued when it was buried within a larger company. Hey, coincidentally, both companies report next Thursday. Let's see if the classic food conglomerate can at last beat its potato-headed stepchild. Who else fits the pattern? All right, a couple years ago, Exelon, huge regulated utility, decided to break up with its far less consistent power production business. They ought to be spun it off as Constellation Energy. Remember, Constellation's all about nuclear with a wind and solar kicker. But back then, energy prices were low and nuclear was seen as a dead end. That calculus was already starting to change by the time the spinoff was completed in February 2022. Not only did traditional energy prices rebound, but nuclear got some major goodies in the so-called Inflation Reduction Act, which passed a few months later. Overall, nuclear power is seen in a much more positive light these days. Because for now, it's the only reliable way to produce carbon-free energy at scale. And a lot of companies want green energy. Can't beat it. Amazon Web Services just bought a nuclear-powered data center campus in Pennsylvania. And that's why Constellation Energy is giving you a mammoth gain of nearly 250% in a little over 2 years, while Exelon is down over the same period. Constellation is supposed to be trash. It turned out to be treasure. We've seen the same dynamic from another big breakup that was completed last fall when Kellogg spun out its North American cereal business as WK Kellogg while changing its name to Kellanova, a company that's now largely focused on snacks. Everybody thought this was about the company jettisoning its slow growth cereal business in order to go all in on its snack space, which was beloved at the time. WK Kellogg's stock, it dropped like a rock in the first few days of trading. Fell from 15 on September 29th all the way down to 10 bucks and change on October 4th. Its third day of regular way trading. It seemed like nobody wanted the cereal business. But if you tuned out at that point, you missed out something remarkable. WK Kellogg has made a huge comeback. The stock's now at just under $19. That's up an incredible 41% since it started regular way trading. Kellanova's up just 8%.
The House of Pain.
Over the same period as the market, perhaps because of the weight loss drug bandwagon, has moved away from snacks. Any way you slice it, big surprise. So why is it that unloved spinoffs often outperform parent companies? Sometimes there are unique circumstances, like the Constellation Energy, where they kind of get lucky. Energy prices roared, nuclear power came back in style after spending decades as a pariah. Sometimes the part of the business that had been underperforming was actually just starved for resources before the breakup. Resources it didn't get because the other divisions gave management better returns on their investment. Overall, though, I think expectations can just get so low for the more undesirable business that if the spinoff does anything other than fall flat on its face, its stock can have some nice gains. And that is the story about W.K. Kellogg. When the unloved cereal stock was bouncing around its lows last October, it was selling for just 5 or 6 times the forward earnings estimates. That's a very cheap stock, even for a company with little in the way of growth. When W.K. Kellogg announced its first dividend on November 2nd, we found out that this darn thing was yielding north of 6%.
Buy!
Not only was that a dividend, a major sign of confidence. Wrong. It also gave you a terrific reason to buy the stock, even if you think it's a no-growth stock. Plus, just because the cereal category has some challenges, that doesn't mean that W.K. Kellogg is some sort of schlump-a-dick operation. This is the house of timeless brands like Frosted Flakes, Fruit Loops, and Rice Krispies, along with some newer, better-year brands like Kashi. This company now reported 2 quarters since the split, and both times the numbers were outright good, so the stock has soared. But even after its run, W.K. Kellogg still sells at roughly 12 to 13 times estimates, and it's got a 3.4% yield, which is much more reasonable for a packaged food company. What a star. So why bring this up now? Because we've got two major industrial breakups coming next week. They're going to be gigantic. On Monday, the troubled 3M will complete the spinoff of its healthcare business as Solventum. We're watching that one closely. And then on Tuesday, General Electric is finally spinning off its power renewables division as GE Vernova. I am so excited about that. Here's the bottom line. I'll cover both of those splits in depth next week. For now, I just want you to keep in mind that these breakups tend to be good for all involved. Sometimes the most unloved spinoffs produce the best performance.
House of Pleasure.
Craig in Connecticut. Craig!
Hey, Jim. Big fan of the show.
Thank you, Craig. What's going on?
I've owned Whirlpool since March of 22, and it hasn't done well. Seems to be moving in the right direction recently, so my question is, at this point, should I cut my losses and sell it or hold the line?
Okay, I have to tell you that I actually think that Whirlpool is okay, but I want to recommend to you instead to go into Stanley Black & Decker with a 3.3% yield and much more upside. I thought that the Whirlpool reorganization in Europe was not what I wanted, so Whirlpool's fine, but I prefer Stanley Black & Decker. All right, look, these big company breakups tend to be good for all involved, and sometimes the most unloved spinoffs produce the best performance. Much more Mad Money ahead. The Dow just had its best first quarter since 2021. I'm taking a look at the top performers, and the list might surprise you. Plus, yesterday we held the monthly meeting exclusive for CNBC Investing Club subscribers. Tonight I'm giving you a taste of the club, answering some leftover questions from club members. And then, of course, all your calls rapid fire in tonight's edition of the Lightning Round. So stick with Cramer. This week, my colleague Jeff Marks and I held our monthly meeting for the CNBC Investing Club. We went through our latest charitable trust holdings, and I gave my unfiltered thoughts on our positions and the market. We also took questions from club members, which is, you know, my favorite part of the whole shoot match. We never have enough time to get through as many questions as I'd like. So tonight, we're going to take a few more and give you a taste of what we do for the Investing Club. Now, if you like this sort of thing, and I'm sure you do, be sure to join the club. You can scan the QR code with your phone or go to CNBC.com/investing club to sign up. I think this thing's easier. I learned how to do this because my daughter showed me about a week ago. It's really easy. All right, let's take some questions. First, we have James in Illinois who says, I've been watching since the ticker tape was in fractions and have the VHS tapes to prove it. Good for you. I've done very good on your liking of Chipotle. Why haven't you recommended for the club Booyah? The reason I haven't recommended for the club is because, frankly, every time I wanted to get into it for the club, it moved. And the lesson here is that I was too chary. This was a great stock and is a great stock, and I recommended it first after that terrible airborne illness. And we knew from a couple of other stocks, that the companies that had the same problem, that it was going to go up. So this one is on me. It was my bad. I never got in, even though I've had them on many times. And it's a good learning lesson. Sometimes you can't be as disciplined, and you have to let go a little bit. That's the lesson of that one. Glenda in New York says, "Hi, Jim. I'm a preschool teacher, fantastic, who's been hooked watching you every night and hopes to improve my teacher's income. What are your thoughts on Tesla? Should I just take the loss down 46.41 and move on to invest elsewhere?" Well, I'll tell you, this is a very difficult issue, Glenda, because this was the worst performing stock in the S&P 500. And I'm really reluctant in the first quarter. I'm really reluctant to tell someone to sell it after it's the worst. Let's hold on. By the way, Micron is a stock that used to be worse than best and worse than best. I'm beginning to think that Tesla could be like that. Don't sell it down here. Now we've got Terry in the U.S. Well, it's kind of a broad place, who says, "I took your advice on hogs get slaughtered and sold SMCI in time. Thank you." How do you maintain discipline to sell when you need to, when human nature is to hold on a little longer for more gains? Well, this is the exact opposite, frankly, of the Chipotle, which is that sometimes what you have to do is just say, you know what? It doesn't matter. I'm up. I like to use these days. It used to be 25%. Up 50%, I try to take off between 10 and 20% of that stock and then let it climb. And that was the old cashmere sweater line I used to tell you. When I used to go to the slots and ponies with my mom, she always would leave after we had won to go buy a cashmere sweater. Go take some money off and buy the cashmere sweater. Let's go to Danny in Canada, who says, "Being from Western Canada, commodities are a big deal in our economy. The price of gold has never been this high in dollar terms, but the price of mining company shares have never been this low. Why have mining shares not gone up? Because the incredible amount of intensity to get to the level of gold that is commercial, the spending is so high, the labor is so high, the equipment is so high, that it turns out that the stocks did not do the job. But what did the job was bullion. And I think that's terrific. If you don't want to do bullion, you can always do the ETF. I believe in gold. I think you can have between 5 and 10% of your portfolio in gold as a hedge. By the way, I feel the same way about Bitcoin. Some people feel I'm anti-Bitcoin. That's completely untrue. I was anti-Sam Bankman-Fried. Now we have Brad in Florida, who says, "Booyah, Jim. Thank you for all the work that you and the team put in day after day." The team does that. That is very true. My question is about the home builders. Have we missed the window on Toll Brothers, Lennar, or even Builders First Source? In your opinion, do they have more room to run? By the way, Home Depot bought a company today, SRS, that I think is to compete against Builders First Source. I think that Toll is still a good buy here. We own Stanley Black & Decker for the club. I think it's got a better yield, and I think it's down 100 points. This is the better one to buy. But I have to tell you, Toll and Lennar are fantastic companies. You're never going to go wrong owning either. We feel that it's too undiversified to own Toll and Stanley Black & Decker, but you know what? These are all fine companies. Now let's go to Georgia and Ohio. It says Apple's being sued by the DOJ. That's Department of Justice. This represents a serious overhang to the stock price, at least in the near midterm. Does this order your own it, don't trade it thesis, given that the stock may lag the market sector over an extended period of time? All right, first of all, the stock was down 10% in the first quarter, which we know is a very good first quarter. I'm not discouraged. I say own it, don't trade it. I do that because I've said ever since, literally, about 150 points, I've been saying this, it has these periods of underperformance. The Department of Justice suit was filled with errors. I felt it had very little merit to it. Apple will file a motion of dismissal in the month of May, and I don't think that will be granted, but I don't think it's nearly the overhang that other people think it is, because the case is fatuous. Now we have Joseph in New York, who says, "I was impressed with your interview with Medtronic CEO. What would it take for Medtronic to enter the portfolio or bullpen? I told Jeff Medtronic has got to be in the bullpen. It's a terrific situation. We have to take something else out, though. We just we had Nucor in. Nucor took off, not unlike Chipotle. I'm being perhaps a little bit too, again, disciplined. But the problem is we have so many positions. I have said we have to leave a position in order to take one in. But you're absolutely right. Medtronic was the medical star of the entire GTC. Jensen, I was thinking about the picture I just saw of Jensen in a 2003 tweet. But anyway, that was the star of the medical part of the show. A big thank you to everyone who submitted their questions. You're why we do this. Again, if you want to follow along on every buy, every sale, and every piece of commentary, remember, the sales and buys are all done by you ahead of them when we can. You just have to join the club. And I'm very proud of the club, and I'm very proud of Jeff Marks and our team for making everything work so well. Mad Money's back after the break.
Coming up, hit us with your best shot. An electrified fast fire lightning round is next.
It is time! It is time for the lightning round. Clear, everybody. It's for the same calls. Robert Fire, same as the bye-bye soldiers. Number step for the beginning. Play this out. And then the lightning round is over. Are you ready? Ski dance over the lightning round. Clear, it's my water. Start with Eugene in Minnesota. Eugene!
How are we doing?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Pretty good. The spot is for Maine.
Okay, Core & Main is right at the heart of this infrastructure bull market I keep talking about because it does wastewater. It is perfectly positioned. Believe it or not, even though it's just been a horse, it can go higher. I need to go to Rebecca in New York. Rebecca!
Hello. It's such a pleasure talking to you. I bought Eli Lilly a while ago and also Pfizer. Now, Eli Lilly is doing very well, and Pfizer is not. Should I sell Pfizer and
Eli Lilly? And you know, Rebecca, no. Rebecca, let's be paid. Pfizer's a 6% yielder. I know it's been, what can I say? It's been the worst. But you know what? Merck used to be bad for a long time, and Rob Davis came in, turned it around. Let's give Pfizer a chance. They got this really good acquisition that I like of Seagen. Let's give it some time here. I need to go to Tom in New Jersey. Tom!
Booyah, Jim. This is Tom in Berkeley Heights, New Jersey.
Right Berkeley up the Heights, you're around the corner from me, for heaven's sake. Amazing.
I'm calling to ask about SFL, formerly known as Ship Finance, and their dividend.
People like these things. Really? People like these bulk carriers right now because a lot of problems. Do not overstay your welcome. This has been a big run, but it's going to go a little higher. I need to go to Blake in Tennessee. Blake.
Hey, Jim. I'm a club member who wants to say the Ship Man, and Jeff knocked it out of the park with Wednesday's monthly meeting.
He sure did, man. I said the same to my wife. That Jeff is a powerhouse. How can I help?
Hey, Jim, I wanted your input on this stock that just continues to run and run. Is it a good stock to get in now on or a pullback? It's Leidos, LDOS.
Oh, my. Well, every time you go through one of those, when you go to an airport, I mean, you see it, Leidos. It's a defense contractor that is actually not struggling to get money out of Congress. I think it's a winner. I don't want to get off that horse yet. Let's go to Dennis, New Jersey. Dennis.
Hey, Jim, how are you?
I'm doing well. How about you, Dennis?
Good, thank you. Second time caller, founding club member, and I got to thank you for that because I never traded a stock in my life.
All right, we're teaching.
Crushing it. Jim was doing some research on one of your favorites, Lamb, and came across another one that wanted your advice on, KLAC.
Sure. Oh, KLA is a very good company. I am partial to Lamb and Tim Archer. I think he's doing a little better job, but KLA, nothing to see. He's an excellent company. Let me throw and give it a threesome. I like Applied Materials here, too. I think Applied Materials is excellent. Okay, let's go to Rachel in New York. Rachel.
Hi, Jim. Booyah.
Booyah, Rachel. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Excellent. Thank you for asking.
Thanks for taking my call. I watch it every night with my family. We love it.
Oh, thank you, Rachel.
I was hoping for your thoughts on Chevron.
Which one? Chevron, that's Mike Worth's company. I'm not going to leave it here. It's got 4% yield. It's doing pretty well. Let's stay long, Mike Worth and Chevron. And that, ladies and gentlemen, good of the Lightning Round.
The Lightning Round is sponsored by Charles Schwab. Coming up, we're playing until the final whistle. Don't start your weekend until Kramer kicks off No Huddle. Next.
Sometimes I feel like everyone in this business is always fighting the last war. How many times have you heard that this market's led by just 7 stocks and nothing else matters? I mean, that is still the conventional wisdom, isn't it? Even though it hasn't been true for the past 5 months. We just closed out one of the best first quarters in ages with a broad-based advance that was a classic continuation of the last 2 months of 2023, when all the stocks that have been crushed by high interest rates came roaring back. In retrospect, that was the moment to buy pretty much every stock out there, other than the Magnificent 7. In fact, with Apple down 11% and Tesla off 29%, the Mag 7 didn't even outperform the averages this quarter. Tesla was the worst performer in the entire S&P 500. But what's been working? When I tell you the top five stocks in the Dow this quarter, I bet you'll be shocked. Because it's the most broad-based all-encompassing rally I can recall. First, there's Disney, propelled by Nelson Peltz's proxy fight. He's trying to get a pair of board seats, which has put a gun to management's head. I think that's why Disney's finally gotten its act together and controlling costs, although I don't think management shares that position. Reasonable people can disagree if they are reasonable. I've been pounding the table on this one for the investing club for ages. So it's great to see Disney pan out. I want to thank both Bob Iger and the CEO and Nelson Peltz for the spectacular performance, even as the proxy fight has come at a large cost to the company. But, you know, as they say in the NFL, a W is a W, no matter how ugly. Second best performer in the Dow is Caterpillar, a stock that we took a tremendous gain in for the Chapel Trust, although we left a ton on the table. Why? Because CEO Jim Umpleby is doing such a terrific job. He's capitalizing the big data center build-out along with the massive infrastructure spending coming from the federal government. I know Cat seems like a gimme in retrospect, but many of the analysts fought this one tooth and nail. I think they misjudged how positive it would be for Cat when the Fed decided to stop raising rates, and they also misjudged what a canny operator Umpleby is. What a great choice for a CEO. Remember, we don't fight the Fed, we don't fight the tape, but once the Fed came in peace, Caterpillar stock, well, it soared.
Bye.
The third best performer might be the Dow stock that the Bears were most negative on coming into the quarter. American Express. Amex thrived in consumer spending, especially travel and leisure, the part of the economy that's supposed to be rolling over with rates this high. It did the exact opposite, with restaurant spending growing double digits, surprisingly small number of defaults, spectacular combo from Steve Squeri, who's doing a monster good job at the helm. I think this rally took more people by surprise than even the running Caterpillar. Again, what a great quarter. Number four is Merck. We had CEO Rob Davis on last night, and his company announced a dramatic breakthrough against an often fatal disease, pulmonary arterial hypertension. Tends to strike women in the prime of life, ages 30 to 60. That drug, now named Winrevair, might actually produce as much as $10 billion in peak sales. Merck's been riding a wave of profits from Keytruda. It's an amazing cancer drug, has a tremendous pipeline of potential blockbusters, including some that might come from the breakthrough work demonstrated by Winrevair. I think the stock has much further to run. Finally, Travelers, the insurance company, rounds out the top five performers as rates have been going up for most lines of insurance, something that's bedeviled the Fed because these insurance increases are a major component of inflation. This is one of a handful of industries that is preventing the Fed from cutting interest rates. So let's see. Last year, we were led by a handful of tech companies, but we're finishing the first 90 days of 2024 led by an entertainment company, an earth mover, a credit card business, a huge pharma giant, and a colossal insurance company. Now, you can say that's one eclectic list, or you can reach the right conclusion. This market came in like a lamb, and it's going out like a lion or a bull. I like to say there's always a bull market somewhere, and I promise to try to find it just for you right here on Mad Money. I'm Jim Cramer. See you Monday. Last call starts now.
All opinions expressed by Jim Cramer on this podcast are solely Cramer's opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, or their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by Cramer on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Jim Cramer as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his opinion. Cramer's opinions are based upon information he considers reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Mad Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Mad Money disclaimer.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. FedEx Ground service is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.